SB Nation Radio here on 106.7 The Fan with Mike Prentice, Scott Jackson with you here, and our pleasure to bring in from SB Nation DC, one of the editors, Dan Schifferaw, is with us, and we're going to talk some Redskins. How you doing today, Dan?
I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well. I'm curious, are you preparing your Redskins video at the end of the year? I mean, I know you had a pretty funny one earlier with the Redskins decision, you know, LeBron, what should I do?
Yeah.
So you're working on one?
Yeah, we're definitely trying to follow it up. You know, got to make sure we have a nice, you know, original idea like we did last time, and you know, try and make it as funny as we could. It had a lot of success, so we're trying to make sure it can be at least better than the previous one. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I thought you had an interesting article this week. You went to the Redskins game last Sunday against the Giants, and you wrote about how all the players are just even last year they were all so upset. They were also negative about the state of the team. This year, even though they won only two more games, they seem a lot more optimistic about where the team is headed. Now, what do you think? Why do you think that is? And did that surprise you at all when you talked to these guys?
Oh, definitely. I mean, when I walked down to the locker room, you know, I was kind of expecting everybody to be down. You know, they just lost the Giants. They just finished a 6-10 season. You know, here we go again, type of stuff. You know, and instead of that, you know, everybody was kind of laughing and joking, kind of had smiles on their faces, and I was wondering, you know, what is going on here? And the first thing I realized was they were just really relieved that the season was over. You know, the whole thing is done. The nightmare is over. You know, they went through a lot of turmoil. And the second thing is they were legitimately optimistic. Like if you looked at looked into their eyes and everything, they were for real, man. They actually said, you know what, this 3-4 is going to work in the end. And, you know, we believe in Kyle Shanahan's offense and everything, even though they don't have a quarterback. You know, I mean, they really believe that everything's going to be fine in the future. They believe in their coaching staff, believe in their front office, and a lot of guys want to be back. Even some guys who aren't even sure that they're going to be back next year, they do want to come back to Washington. So that was surprising, to say the least.
It is interesting, and certainly a lot of the guys who you talk to don't even know where they're going to be next year. But the feeling that they kind of, you know, felt, I guess they realized after being with Jim Zorn for a couple of years that this is kind of the way an NFL team should be run, whether you like Shanahan or not. There's certainly an order in a way that it's done. And maybe, you know, the fact that this is the first time they've kind of been around it for the guys that weren't around it when Joe Gibbs was here.
Oh, definitely. And I think the Haynesworth thing was kind of the biggest example of that. I mean, Haynesworth is kind of the poster child of everything that went wrong with the Redskins over the last 10 years. I mean, got paid a ton of money, didn't work hard, you know, just a big bust overall. And I think they all wanted to know that, you know, it didn't matter how much money you make, doesn't matter who you are, you're going to be treated just like everybody else. And for Mike Shanahan to really go out of his way, and obviously, you know, it was controversial the way he went about it, you know, should he have let it go on too long, et cetera, but he did make the example out of Haynesworth, and players noticed. You know, because of that, you know, that kind of transferred into everything else. And I think Shanahan said the other day that he had more player fines here in Washington than his first year in Denver and his first year in Oakland, because he really needed to set the standard. And now, you know, all the players are on board and they all know what to do, you know, going forward. And they won't have any issues about work ethic going forward.
Here's my question. And I know Chad Dukes wrote about this on the site this week. He said, well, what did Mike Shanahan really accomplish? They didn't really rebuild. They didn't really kind of get much better. So what did he accomplish? And the obvious counter-argument is kind of what you're talking about, is that everybody knows who's in charge now and everybody feels like they're treated as equals. But how much value do you place in that? I mean, is that worth the season that they had? Is that how valuable is that going to be going forward in your mind?
Well, I mean, according to the players, it's very valuable. I mean, they said that last year, basically, they didn't treat Zorn with any respect. I mean, they basically just walked all over him. You know, they went straight to, like, Dan Snyder if they had any issues. And, you know, that's not the way to run any franchise. I mean, regardless of whether or not you're winning or losing, you can't run a franchise like that. So it definitely is important. And in the first year of any rebuilding project, changing the culture is always step one. And, of course, step two is, of course, actually, you know, installing new systems and getting new players and actually having on-field success. But it is important to start a new culture, but you know, going forward, I think Mike Shanahan is going to be judged on wins and losses. But this year, I think you can kind of give him a pass because it was his first year. Even though he's Mike Shanahan and has two Super Bowl rings, you know, he wasn't really working with the best talent. So it was all about kind of setting the culture first and foremost.
Dan Chipperaw is with us, a weekend editor for SB Nation DC, with us here on 106.7 The Fan. It's SB Nation Radio. Scott Jackson and Mike Prater with you. Well, one of the interesting things I heard from players, and this drives me crazy, and I mean crazy, because I've heard it here for about three straight years when teams are losing, is, well, we were in a lot of games. Well, this week I decided, well, really, the NFL did it for me. They pulled up the numbers for you at the end of the year. 256 NFL games played, eight points or less. 50% of the games are played at 8 points or less. 7 points or fewer, 47.3% of games. So guess what? The league set up for close games. Big damn deal that you played close games. I'm so tired of hearing about that. They had the exact same amount of close games last year, you know, under Jim Zorn, as they did this year under Mike Shanahan. I mean, that kind of stuff, though, still kind of concerns me. There's still that kind of loser mentality here that, look, this isn't, you know, horseshoes. It doesn't matter if it's close or not. W's and L's is all that matters.
Absolutely. I mean, this isn't, I mean, when you're thinking about winning and losing in the NFL, there's such a fine line. I mean, the talent gap is not, like, so huge. Obviously, the Redskins have talent issues, but, you know, it's not to the point where it's just glaring, where it's like college versus the pros. You know, I mean, every team's always going to be in it, every game. I mean, it's rare that you're going to walk, like, a bad team is going to walk into a game and get blown out by 40 points every single time. There should be no moral victories in staying within 3 points of a team. You always should value actually getting W's, rather than, you know, oh, well, you know, we stayed within a touchdown, so that kind of counts. It doesn't count at all. It's still right. A loss. So, you know, having games like, because I could have sworn after the Rex Grossman, his first start against Dallas, you could have sworn that Mike Shanahan won the game,
right,
the way he was talking,
man,
after the game. But, I mean, it was still a loss, so it didn't matter. I mean, winning is winning, and I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, you're either a winner or you're a loser at the end of the day.
Exactly.
There you go. I did think it was funny, that press conference after the Dallas game, where he seemed like he was more happy that Rex Grossman played well than that the team lost. But I want to ask the question now going forward. We talked a little bit earlier in the show about what do they do from here, and kind of they have a lot of cap space to play with, but they also have some decisions to make on some of their players. I know Santana Moss is a free agent, and obviously the 10th pick. In your mind, what do you think should be kind of the general philosophy of this offseason? Should they spend a lot of that money that they have? Should they kind of sit back and kind of do this a little slower? You know, what do you think they should do with that draft pick?
Well, it's really, really tough because, first of all, their needs are just so many. I mean, they got needs at quarterback, offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, you know, all over the place. And, you know, they got 7 picks in the draft, and they only got, like, two picks in the first and second round. So it's really tough because I think that, you know, given their cap situation, they can be aggressive, but I don't know how much they'll be able to because, you know, given the CBA issues and the fact that, you know, they got a lot of tough decisions on their own guys, you know, like you just said, you know, Santana Moss, Carlos Rogers, and then they got to figure out who they can get rid of. You know, I'd say that list involves, you know, Casey Ryback, Rocky McIntosh, of course, Andre Carter, and then, of course, dealing with your two biggest problems of the year, which is Albert Haynesworth and Donovan McNabb. And then from there, you just got to figure out, you know, do we want to draft a quarterback? Do we want to just start all over again and just go O-line, D-line? You know, so they have a lot of tough decisions going forward, and I think that they should just get help on 3-4 in general because they have basically 3 starters on defense right now, which is Adam Carricker, London Fletcher, who's already getting up there, and Brian Aracco. In terms of your front 7, that's 4 guys you need to replace. So, and they don't even have a true nose tackle. So, I mean, if you run the 3-4 and you don't have a nose tackle, I mean, that's pretty tough. So, I was stuck there.
We saw that this year.
Yeah. You got no shot. You really don't. I mean, you know, look, Brian played better at the end of the year, but, you know, did you see enough of him to trust him? Is the whole thing, you know, when you look at it. But you're right. I mean, there's so many other needs. That's why, look, the skill positions to me, if you get the other stuff taken care of, you can get by with a little bit less of the skill positions. I think the New England Patriots showed us that this year, by the way.
Yeah, but they do have Brady.
Yeah, they have Brady, right. But the guys at wide receiver, I mean, they basically threw Randy Moss off and took – no, Deion Branch was dead. I mean, everybody thought Deion Branch had died. And they bring him back in there, and it works because of the Patriots. Danny Woodhead goes to middle school with my son. I'm positive. He's the same kid. I see the bus stop every morning. And Wes Welker is Wes Welker, and he also looks like he's in middle school. So, I mean, they just got these little runs out there with Brady. So if you get the lines correct – and, yes, you still need to get that franchise quarterback, but the problem is this might not be the year to get it after all because of, you know, what's in the draft.
Exactly. I mean, pretty much they're going to have their choice of Jake Locker and Jake Locker, pretty much, because Gabbert is going to be gone by the time he gets to the 10th pick. And obviously Andrew Luck declared or said that he was going to go back to school yesterday, and they weren't going to get him anyway. So, I mean, they're pretty much going to have a tough choice at 10, because if they want to draft a franchise quarterback at 10, is there anyone who's really a franchise quarterback at number 10? Or if they have a choice of getting like a stud D tackle who can definitely anchor the line for years to come, I mean, they can't pass that up either. So it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, which direction they go at number 10.
Last thing I'm kind of curious about, we had a bit of a discussion about this on the site. Do you sign Vince Young, yes or no?
No, not even close.
Hey, I'm just saying, he wins football games. All right, fine, I agree with you. I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, there's just too many issues here. I mean, if we couldn't even deal with McNabb, and he's a class act. How can you deal with Vince Young? I mean,
well, maybe you want to go in the complete opposite direction now. You can't do the class act. Let's try something different.
Yeah. Oh, good grief.
Hey, Dan, appreciate you giving us some time. Dan Schifraw, the weekend editor, SB Nation, D.C., with us here on SB Nation Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, no problem. There is Dan Schifraw with us here on SB Nation Radio. From one Dan to another, Dan Steinberg, the Sports Bog, Washington Post, coming up next. We'll talk some 24/7 Capitals with him here on SB Nation Radio. Scott Jackson, Mike Prado on 106.7 The Fan.